You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Migration is not what it's cracked up to be.
Multiculturalism has become more of a cultural phenomenon. We're the others, you know, we're the ones that dress up in funny costumes, have occasional festivals, but we're not seen as politicized agents in a society.
È il momento di spostare l'attenzione dalle promesse istituzionali all'organizzazione popolare.
Buonasera a tutte e tutti. You're listening to Radio Filef on 3CR 855 AM. Thanks for bearing with us for those 2 minutes. Well, we had a small technical difficulty.
And the computer wasn't clicking.
Yeah, we're in studio with myself, Vittorio.
Piero.
And we've got some lovely guests, Miluma May and her mother, Sara.
And Carla,
Sara's friend. So we're really happy to have you in. It'll be great to talk to you all a little later on in the program. But we've got a little bit of news to cover, some anniversaries this week. But before we do that, how's everyone's week been?
Beautiful. We met up with you guys last night and had a pizza.
Had some delicious pizza. Yeah. What did you think of the pizza, Mum?
Very delicious.
Che buono.
You were relieved not that, because you guys live up in northern New South Wales and you don't get to, there's a certain cutoff where you can get to go out and eat. And last night you could just go out and eat till a bit later. And
yes, it was lovely to be able to eat into the later hours of the evening and even to just be around non-English speaking people was very refreshing. Yeah. Less English people.
It was like an episode of Fawlty Towers last night. Everyone was popping in and saying hello.
Every time the door opened, there was a ciao.
And I heard Tobia was the pizzaiolo.
Yeah.
How are his pizzas? I've had them. They're pretty good.
Delicious. Delicioso.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll just quickly go through some headlines. Listeners have probably seen the news from Spain, or as we should say, occupied African territory in Ceuta, I think I've pronounced that right, where upwards of 60,000 migrants were able to cross through over the border. It feels strange to say border because it is a colony.
Enclave, colony.
And, you know, not many people might know, but there is actually still little pockets of Africa that remain European colonies. And I mean, a lot can be said about what happened, why it happened. It has to be called for what it is, a humanitarian crisis. I mean, with I read 60 plus people died on the day.
Yeah.
But you know, the reasons why, we don't need to go into what I'm interested in is the reaction that has happened in Europe that has made me think about how we're also facing pretty strong anti-migrant racism here in Australia. It's been something, it's been basically in the fabric of the social political fabric of Australia since its since federation. I mean, that's the reason it federated, was to exclude non-white people from migrating here. But one thing, Piero, I saw you were talking a bit about this, what Maloney had announced.
She's stopping the Schengen agreement with Spain, which basically allows once you are like a refugee and you get into Europe, the Schengen agreement allows you to move from, say, Spain through to Italy, through to France and to wherever you want to go. And she's discontinued that relationship with Spain, paused it.
And what's that going to achieve in terms of what she thinks it's going to achieve?
It will achieve nothing, because if... it will just achieve chaos and it's just going to achieve a chaos, because the people, for one, everyone that went across the border into the Spanish enclave, for the most part, everyone's gone back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no one, the reporting here makes it sound like everyone's coming into Europe, which is a bit, it's been a bit disingenuous, the reporting.
That's how it's been used, definitely.
People, it's like, yeah, I don't think people even have a basic kind of knowledge of just geography. You know?
So that's like it's yeah. for the local
yeah.
consumption. For,
yeah.
I can see it leading into the election. It's, yeah. There's an election year yeah. next year.
Yeah.
In Italy, there's also one in Victoria coming up. Just to quickly say, there's been like the criticism on Spain from these right-wing demagogues. Sueta, I was reading about the border there. It's one of the most militarized borders in the world, with drones, permanent military presence, turrets. Like it makes the Trump's border wall look like nothing really in comparison. Yep. But I was just thinking, Maloney was saying, we're doing this to protect our people, protect borders, keep us safe. And I thought, look, you know, it's a bit rich coming from her, particularly in this week, when I think about what really is not making people safe, and or what people talk about in terms of what's good for the public. You know, it used to be about healthcare, workers' rights, all those traditional demands of the left. And the right wing in Europe and here in Australia too has done very well to, I guess, go beyond that and reduce it to, this fear of the other.
Yeah, fear of the other. I was about to fill in your words.
And I was just saying it's a bit rich because this week on the 2nd of August was the 46th anniversary of the bombing of Bologna train station.
Yep.
That's killed 85 people and injured hundreds more. Maloney every year and all the governments every year make these typical statements. The one thing about Maloney and her traditional links to the fascist movement,
the right, the ultra-right,
and even, some not so untenuous links to the people who were convicted of this crime, of this this bombing. She refuses to call it for what it was, a fascist, a terrorist attack.
Which in the ruling, they said the straight out.
Of all the Piombo bombings, this one is the one that's probably got the most closure in terms of convictions. It really opens up a can of worms if we want to talk about this one in particular. I mean, there's the involvement and the direction of the P2 Masonic Lodge leader. It sounds like real conspiracy theory stuff, but it's true. There's the connections of parliamentarians, old fascist party members. But it's just, such an important day to remember in Italian history. And I think when we're thinking about parties like Meloni's Brothers of Italy,
talking about protecting the safety
think
of
about
people.
Who, like, yeah, think about who these people are as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the MPs who's been appointed a few years ago as the anti-mafia commissioner, I think that's the title, had to scrub her social media clean because she had photos of her with one of the convicted bombers laughing and smiling. And she's probably even more outwardly fascist than Maloney has. Maloney's probably more tuned in on how to fix up her image. Another thing that has come across to us, so I think I'll leave most of this for next week for Massimo because he knows about this. There's a social centre in Rome, Spin Time.
He's got a lot of people on the ground there.
He's told us about it in conversations. It's a grassroots-led occupation of an apartment building that houses, I forget how many hundred families plus, and has been doing so for years. And it's got a lot of public support, but it's also been under attack from time to time. There was a small fire there last week, and I think it was the council or the fire brigade came down and declared the entire building uninhabitable, evicted everybody. People are on the street. And I think I'd like to hear what Massimo has to say about that. But just bringing it back to local stuff, I mean, thinking about those kind of direct action things in Italy, it's you know, they try and do something like that here with the laws here about squatting, and it's not going to last very long. But one thing I think about is how the public can support it. And there's a lot of actions to support here. There's a struggle for housing that's ongoing across the country. It's a shocking state across the board. Just thinking about how the public comes down and supports it is amazing. And it's something that, you know, 3CR broadcasts a lot. What do you think about that, Milhoma?
The housing crisis in Australia? More broadly, or just... one thing that my brain just jumped to, and sorry for the listeners because it'll just go from one thing to another, but just in terms of connected struggles, I just think about back home in the NT and what we're seeing with the intersection of the climate crisis and the housing crisis, and how people most vulnerable to experiencing the worsening of the climate crisis with rising heat temperatures are also the same people experiencing the absolute, intentional failures of the colony in terms of accessible housing, in terms of climate safe housing. Just thinking about a lot of my family's living in houses with not even a fan, let alone air conditioning, in tropical Australia. And let alone access to a swimming pool or a car to then have access to a water hole. So when we're thinking about the importance of housing, it's not even like there is just the simple thing of everyone deserves and has an inalienable right to have a secure and warm or cold house, depending on what climate you live in, as well as a house for the long term. But as well as that, we actually have other competing factors of where this world's headed in terms of the climate. That's obviously a little bit of a tangent, but that's where my brain was jumping to and thinking about, you know, whether it's families in Italy or families in Wadair or the Tiwi Islands, the most vulnerable people are going to be seeing the impacts of the climate crisis.
Definitely,
and then not even have their own housing to keep them safe. And we actually just had some terrible floods in Daly River at the start of this year, and the entire community was evacuated for up to 3 to 4 months and moved to Darwin. The entire community uprooted and shifted out as climate refugees and moved to Darwin. All these families lost everything. Hundreds of families have lost absolutely everything. This also wasn't reported across Australia. No one knew about it.
Down here.
And people were moved into what were described as open air prisons, and like the Catherine Showgrounds or the Darwin Showgrounds, and forced to sleep on little tiny raised beds, and had to even do things like have a wristband, had to scan in and out. You couldn't move freely.
Mm-hmm.
And you also had to, there was even reports, and journalist A. Parkinson did really great coverage on this, but reports of people having to, couldn't even shower in privacy because there had to be a guard to watch them shower. So we're talking about prison-like conditions for people whose houses have just been destroyed by an incident not created by them. Mm. Shout out to Inpex and Santos. That's their mob's responsibility. Yes.
Yeah.
for creating these climate disasters. Just that's, you know, the intersections of what we're dealing with. And, thanks to the listeners for bearing with my tangent, but that's what came up for me. And seeing these same themes of stories not being reported, what's being reported, who is the audience, the questions of also safety for who and from what.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was focused on my families and your families, it's actually we want to be safe to speak our languages, we want to be safe to learn our songlines, we want to be safe to be on our country. And I think white Australia and the colony has a different idea of what's safe for them, which is, honestly, for everyone in this room to not be here.
Well, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the parallels that we see, it's kind of like there is this, there's definitely a global element to it, especially with climate change. But particularly the stuff, the links I'm seeing between Italy and Australia with the right wing in particular. It's interesting because in Australia, it's the distinction of depends how you classify the Labor Party as well, because I see in Italy, you know, there's Meloni's government, which has its links back to the fascist party. It's the direct heir. You can trace it. They've rebranded or whatever. But they're introducing laws that a lot of them have been brought in by Labor governments in Australia, in a way catching up. And this is years ago now, but a classic example is not just for Italy, but for the far right across Europe has looked to Australia on its migration policy. And is just like they lap it up. It's like a wet dream for them, you know. They just, and that's why particularly these images of Sweta can they jump on that as such an important propaganda tool, and people, it gets people into it. Like it's very effective.
Targeting people's fears.
Mm.
It's really, and like, I mean, I think if you're a little bit insecure about your place in the world, you're more likely to be a little bit concerned about the fears that the right wing are pushing.
Yeah.
And they're trying to target the little insecurities that we have of like, oh, do I belong here or am I safe here? And the right has, they're emotionally manipulating all of us, and it's really cruel.
Mm.
It's actually a really cruel thing. And so then it means when you're trying to counter that, it's really hard because actually what's happening is people are being legitimately hurt and they've actually been moved to an emotional state. And so then I think the problem with the left is that we try to be a bit more pragmatic, but the issue is that the people who've been pulled offside are actually emotionally drawn to something. And it's hard to counter emotion with emotion because then people feel like delegitimized in their position.
It inverts, or I don't know if it tips it on its side, the where dissatisfaction should be directed. It's because this is, you know, talking about what's safe for society and the public, it's generally coming from top down, the threats, whether it's in workplaces, workplace safety, whether it's policing and the repressive elements of the state, whether it's policy around, you know, environmental policy, water usage, all these sorts of things. And it's, I said inverted, but it's more flipped on its side where we're now, not us, obviously, but there is this looking at each other like we're, you know, threats to each other.
Absolutely.
Mm. And I'm saying this particularly in my mind about Italy because I was looking just every 3 months they release the figures for workplace deaths in Italy, and the rates are, it's the highest in Europe, I think, on par with France. Just in the month of June, there are 112 workplace deaths in Italy. So I looked at Australia's rate, and I couldn't find exact figures, but it was over 50 and potentially over 75 for this year up to June. So, like, when Meloni's saying things like, oh, we've got to protect our borders to keep us safe. And I'm thinking,
it's like, you know, what are you doing in your borders?
One of the most unsafe places to be
is within the borders.
Yeah, at work. Or for, like, this couple of weeks ago, we were talking about there was a state killing of a man, Abdur Rahim Fakir, in Bologna. And, I mean, for a lot of people in Italy, the state is the threat directly. It's racialized. And it's, you know, Francesco Albanese called it an Israelization of Italy. And I think about Australia, what Australia's like, and I'm like, it's also an Australianization, this use of violence by the state. Mm. And, like, just to bring it back to the anniversary of the Bologna bombing, like, that was state involvement as well, which got an opportunity to play a nice song by Francesco Guccini. It's called Bologna. It's not necessarily directly about the bombing, but it was released in the same year.
Bologna, una vecchia signora, dai fianchi un po' molli, col seno sul piano padano ed il culo sui colli. Bologna arrogante e papale, Bologna la rossa e fetale, Bologna la grassa e l'umana, già un poco Romagna e in odor di Toscana. Bologna per me provinciale, Parigi minore, mercati all'aperto, bistrò della Rive Gauche l'odore, con Sartre che pontificava, Baudelaire fra l'assenzio cantava, ed io modenese volgare a sudarmi un amore, fosse pure ancillare. Però che bohème confortevole, giocata fra case e osterie, quando ogni bicchiere rimbalzano le filosofie. Oh, quanto eravamo poetici, ma senza pudore e paura, e i vecchi imbriachi sembravano la letteratura. Oh, quanto eravamo tutti artistici, ma senza pudore o vergogna, cullati fra i portici cosce di mamma Bologna. Bologna è una donna emiliana, di zigomo forte. Bologna capace d'amore, capace di morte, che sa quel che conta e che vale, che sa dov'è il sugo del sale, che calcola il giusto la vita e che sa stare in piedi per quanto colpita. Bologna è una ricca signora che fu contadina, benessere, ville, gioielli e salami in vetrina. Sa che l'odor di miseria da mandare giù è cosa seria, e vuole sentirsi sicura con quello che ha addosso, perché sa la paura. Lo sprechi il tuo odor di benessere, però con lo strano binomio dei morti per sogni davanti al tuo santo petrolio. I tuoi bolognesi, se esistono, ci sono da ormai, si son persi, confusi e legati a migliaia di mondi diversi. Oh, quante parole ti cantano, cullando i cliché della gente, cantando canzoni che è come cantare di niente. Bologna è una strana signora, volgare matrona, Bologna bambina per bene, Bologna busona, Bologna ombelico di tutto, mi spinge un singhiozzo e ad un rutto, rimorso per quel che m'hai dato, che quasi ricordo, e in odor di passato.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress.
The towers on Racecourse Road, Flemington, have become Homes Victoria work sites, while the families still living in the buildings are being treated appallingly.
Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents.
Weekdays 7:30 till 9 a.m. as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen
that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided, or bring your own.
There's power in numbers, so see you at 120 Racecourse Road, Flemington, 7:30 till 9 a.m.
Safe Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
Radio Filef.
Sempre antifascista.
That's right, Radio Filef on 3CR 855 AM. You're in studio, or I'm in studio, sorry, with Piero, Milima, Sara and Carla. We've got a message. I forgot to mention, you can write into us on 0488 809 855. We've got a message. I can't read the first few words, but it says, "You guys, good job. Fire up, epic collabs," from somebody who's very busy at the moment. I recognize the writing style. So, yeah, now we could focus our attention to someone very interesting we've got in studio, Sara, who has a long history with Filef. You've been involved with Filef Sydney going back quite some time.
Yes, so back to 1985.
Wow, okay, yeah.
1985, where I saw an ad in a paper, a newspaper, that was advertising for a community theatre group. And I applied to that ad and ended up meeting Roberto, whom I saw today, yeah. And along with Rosie and Daniela and Frank and Nina, some of the people at that time.
Right. Mm. And what was it like? You just saw this ad, and then what was it like getting involved with Filef back then?
Life-changing for me, really, because I had just come back from travelling and had been working as a ragazza alla pari in Rome, yeah, as a nanny, as opposed to being in London. I ended up in Italy, and that was when I was, what am I thinking with that? It's just...
Did you speak?
So it was a case of, I suppose, become very much an Italophile, I suppose. Like, fallen in love with sort of the language and the way of life. And I think, especially being brought up in a very Catholic, Anglo-Saxon, Irish household, it just had a lot of appeal to me, and just how there's this other way of living. And
so theatre was a big part of the draw factor.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, no, and with the Italian language.
And language, yeah.
Because I thought that, this is a way that I can try and keep going with the Italian language.
How was your Italian language when you got back from Italy?
Probably 3 out of 10.
Are you just being humble? Yeah. I don't think you believe her.
No.
But how long were you there?
Not really that long. It was probably about 10 months.
It's long enough. Yeah.
Especially back then.
Yeah.
Yes, but some people are a little bit quicker at picking up language than others.
But you would have been in immersion, though.
To a degree, but no, it was more the structured grammar lessons that I was going to. And just, yes, I was immersed in the community, but I suppose I hadn't really formed meaningful relationships.
So the Filef Theatre was offering Italian language theatre. Were there lessons as well?
Oh, no. It was just that they were putting on community plays.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, actually. No, thinking about it, it was probably one of the first plays that they had put on that I first decided to go and try out for, and it was open to everybody.
Mm.
So there was just this mixed group of people, so actors, musicians, prop makers, that were there to put on a bilingual play, and I'm pretty sure that was La Ceci in Pace.
Yes,
and, yes, and I think that was 1986.
Right, okay. This is just reminds me when we were, when the song was playing, Malilma mentioned how an antidote to, you know, the doom and gloom we speak of when we cover the news is language and intercultural connections that can not just bring people together, but provide an alternative way of thinking and seeing the world and communicating and, you know, fixing those fractured elements of our social fabric.
Yeah, and then thinking like that you're doing bilingual plays at that time and because how old were you in your early 20s?
Mid-20s, yes.
And also like you were speaking before about how this was just the end of the Whitlam era as well.
Yes, so there was definitely more hope, I think, that we were able to try and create a better world. And when you think of FILEF, for what it was standing for the Federation of Italian Workers,
mm-hmm.
and their families, and this was, you know, this was, I think, one way that they wanted to reach out to community to sort of help them understand probably the present context that they were in this Australia in the 1980s through theatre.
Yeah, that's one of the, I mean, just obviously I wasn't alive back then, but I've been reading through a lot of the old Nuova Paese newspapers, the one that FILEF would put out, and having known people who were involved back then, and not just FILEF, but theatre in general was had a lot of potential in this way, and I think as well as Professor Foley speaking about his introduction to theatre. The Black Theatre Company.
Yeah, with Bob Masser as well. Black Theatre.
Mm. And just the what it can do for not just the individuals who, because that's a massive part as well. I mean, finding your voice and being able to express yourself like that, especially with the political elements of the plays that were put on, but also, you know, what it gives to the community. And this cultural element was something that FILEF was always straight onto from the get-go. So, having been started in Melbourne in the early 70s and Sydney as well, Sydney was, I think my understanding, went further with the theatre and was particularly more active in the late 80s with theatre. Text in and tell me if I'm wrong.
And you mentioned this newspaper, and you were talking about the newspaper too, Mum, and you used to contribute to that or write the children's column or something?
Yes, I helped with on the children's page.
Have to go and look through those years of mid to late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, it was probably 88, mid 87 that I started doing that, because I think that was the whole thing. They appreciated people being there involved with the theatre, but they feel definitely saw themselves as more than just a theatre group. Mm. And it was, I suppose, based on that philosophy of working together, supporting each other, and the fact that the newspaper was a lot of work to create, the magazine, I suppose it was more of a magazine. And so they just really appreciated people being able to come and help.
So this is the mid to late 80s. Did you grow up in Sydney? You're from Sydney?
No, Goulburn.
Goulburn. Yes. Lovely, Goulburn. Always stop there if I ever go off to Sydney. Yes, it's that one.
It's before Sydney. Yeah. Just for me, it's Goulburn's almost Sydney for me. I'm more basically in Sydney. Yeah, it's like the Mornington Peninsula in Melbourne. You know, it's all the same.
So you moved to Sydney, you fall in with this radical crowd of Italians.
Yes.
And it was a pretty active time. I mean, I have stories from my parents' friends and my parents as well from that period.
Stefano.
Down in Melbourne. But in Sydney in 88, there was the big bicentennial protest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And PhilEff was involved alongside so many other groups. It was a real groundswell of particularly migrant groups coming out and supporting. Yes. That's my understanding of it. And there's this film, Australia Daze, D-A-Z-E, and I didn't know this, but I did spot a young Roberto Malara, but Maluma said that you're in the shot as well with the pasta bean served.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. A young mum sitting there waiting for your bowl of pasta.
And I just thought it was a classic shot of Roberto for all those people that that know Roberto, of him standing there commanding, sort of commanding the pasta and commanding the room. Lots of incredible fun times.
Fun and serious political discussions. That's my...
And that was the other thing I was going to say with you saying, mentioning about 1988. We started preparing for that 6, if not 12 months beforehand.
Mm.
There were all these meetings about how we can be supporting our First Nations people, and which is the best way for us to be involved and what we can do. And there was this one little activity, I'm calling it an activity, but how could I say
action.
It? Action, sorry. But we had created all these little red flags with a question mark on it, and we attached them to paddle pop sticks. And then we went around Hyde Park and all these different places, putting them into the ground. And it was to provoke, make people think, what is 1988 really about? Because that was the thing, really getting people to start to question. I mean, the number of people that would have looked at those and thought, what are they? Mm. Probably outnumbered those that were thinking, made the connection. But yeah, so we tried in many different ways. Mm. And then I'm just trying to think of the, and then we're there very much there on the day, 26th of January.
I'm bringing up 1988 as well, because we've got actually a recording from one of the plays that you were probably involved in.
Yes.
So this time last year, actually, just by coincidence, we played this. It's some audio from the filming of Storia in Cantiere, and Tobia had tweaked it a little bit, worked on it to edit it to a radio drama, and Bruno narrated some of it. So I've just cut out a few bits of it. We'll listen, maybe you can recognize some voices.
Yes. It's 1988, bicentenary year. To Frank's politically active daughter, it's only a commemoration of an invasion.
And the likes of her family, so much to celebrate about, please, Sam.
Of course, it's a commemoration of an invasion, and it's off to celebrate something like that. Besides, it's got nothing to do with me.
No, your argument, Sandra, your argument.
Whole parties and fireworks and Thatchers, I mean, as if there was no one here or no one here before the British came.
We're anti-British. We don't have to ask where the Italians were during the war. On the other side.
My grandfather was in an internment camp in South Australia, and he was an Australian citizen as well. Oh, yes, and what's the big deal? It's like I was saying, for me it's two things. It's denying what they did to the Aboriginal people. You all heard Kevo talk about that, and they're still treating them bad. His elder sister was taken from the home and fostered out. And second, what's England and the First Fleet got to do with me, or you, or most of us in this room? Our relatives came out in ships called the Roma and the Galileo. When do you hear the government railing on about that?
All right. I think that's enough. Would anyone like to reply to that? Maria.
Yeah, it'd be like us celebrating when the Spanish came to the Americas and started killing us. And the killing's still going on. Here and there.
Thank you.
building worker Tom Canali died falling from a scaffold. Workers decide to suspend work until workplace safety is enforced.
Comrades, family, friends, this day commemorates the death of our workmate Tom Canali. He gave 40 odd years of his life to the building game. Our La Fina, the building game, tragically took his life away. But then again, is it the building game that is to blame? Or is it a stupid and reckless mistake of the bosses that sent him up 8 stories high and plunged him to his death, burying him under 64 tons of concrete and metal? Because Tom Canali died in an accident, which was absolutely no fault of his own. Fellow workers, friends, it is up to us to make sure that his unfortunate death be a reminder to workers and bosses alike of the dangers that each and every one of us workers face day in and day out. And unless rigid, severe and uncompromising steps are taken to secure our safety, then Tom Canale's death is in vain. Here we've got Janice, Health and Safety Officer, to give us the report.
I'd like to say good morning, but it's obviously a very sad morning for us all. Our friend Tom Canali has died and 11 more have been injured. Now, we've inspected the site, we've spoken to Roland, Roberto and John who witnessed the accident, and we've filed a report.
The stop work continues, but the company refuses to meet the workers' safety demands. The only option is to strike. Scioperiamo.
Parlare per una donna, ma sai, tu leggi sempre, ma il building non è veramente posto per donne.
Listen, mate, the building site isn't a place for men or women, especially these big places.
Oh, dai, non prendetela così, scherzavo.
Ma bozzo, you go on about workers' rights, migrants' rights, every other sort of rights. Pero cuando se trata de derechos de las mujeres, se vuelven idiotas.
Ma cosa?
I see. Well, you're going about women's rights. You
turn into an
idiot!
Guarda come parla questa qua. Cosa stai leggendo?
Nuovo paese.
Nuovo paese? It's very interesting.
Ma non mi lasci in pace, no. Ok, sto leggendo un articolo su un walkout, uno sciopero fatto dai aborigeni, Gurindji people, nel 1966. Dalla White Hill Cattle Station nel Northern Territory, dopo che l'Arbitration Commission ha deciso di rinviare l'introduzione di parità di salari per gli aborigeni che venivano pagati meno dei bianchi. E sai perché questa decisione è stata presa? Per risparmiare i soldi ai padroni delle fattorie.
Sounds familiar, eh? Put off an equal pay case to save the station on his mind.
Senti, ma tu hai detto aborigines go on strike, perché I didn't even know that work.
Siamo uno contro l'altro, e chi perde e chi vince, più che altro. Chi vince sono i padroni,
The safety breaches.
Yeah.
To put in a nutshell, they don't give a damn about our safety.
You're listening to Radio Filef on 3CR, Radical Radio.
So, yeah, I wish we could also show you what it was like in the studio listening to that Not only were some voices recognised, but you remembered that song.
Yes, I did. I could.
Mom started never singing it along.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and it was just so good because there was Silvio, Sonia, I think possibly Daniela.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I didn't recognise myself. Didn't recognise my own voice.
38 years ago, or 38 and a half years ago, and yes. the issues are still the same. I mean, I think about what was covered in that play about the First Nation struggle in Australia, workplace rights, racism, migration. It's, you know, we're talking about the same things today. But another... Maluma's told me a bit, especially when that talk you gave at our event, a bit about your work from Philef onwards.
Yes.
So, and particularly about language. And was Philef the beginning of this, you know, this path, or you just went on from it? And what did you do after this stint with these radical Italians in Sydney?
Probably ended up with radicals like Maluma's dad, I suppose. Yeah. language is very much a common thread with it all. And I suppose through the work at Philef, I ended up then doing teaching Italian as a second language, and that was both in Sydney and then and then moved to Darwin, and then I started off doing that in Darwin, and
teaching Italian
to primary school children.
Oh, okay,
yeah, and then I suppose especially being in the territory, it's like another incredible part of the world where you just have this opportunity, if you let yourself, to be, you know, to learn so much about these other countries up there, these other sort of peoples who have so much language and so much culture to share. So then I ended up working in the Tiwi Islands for 4 years in a school, and then came back to Darwin and then met Miloma's dad, and then there was Miloma, and then ended up back from there. We did end up back in New South Wales, but then I ended up going back to the territory in 2020 and working at Yirrkala for a year there. And Yirrkala school, along with the school that I'm there working at now, they both have one of the longest running bilingual schools in Australia. So it's over 50 years they've been going, and I have this incredible job working at the moment as a teacher linguist. So working with the local people there whose language is Murrumbatha, and working with my colleagues there in the bilingual program.
Do you speak Murrumbatha?
Umpo, a little bit. Yeah,
poco.
Yeah, umpo.
Abbastanza.
I'm not going to say qua, but that's Tiwi, so the wrong language I've got there. Yeah, no, but...
And bilingualism or multilingualism is a norm in that part of Australia, isn't it?
Look, I'd love to say yes, but you have, this is where we're really looking at the effects of colonisation, and within that community of about 3,000 people, there have been up to about 19 to 25 different clan groups who at one stage would have all been speaking, where there was probably up to about 13 or 14 different languages, but out of respect for living on the country of the Rakdinman people, Kadu Dinman people, they learnt Murrumpatha as the main language, which has basically put many of their languages, including some of Malilma's family's languages, in danger. And right, so you're probably lucky to have four or five fluent speakers of that language, and they are elderly. So it's not quite that romanticised dream of this multilingual place, because no.
And that's all enabled by the school system as well, where you have, like, the education department. And again, like, there's the respect of knowing whose country people are on and wanting to speak Murrumpatha, but also the school system is not supportive of multilingualism, let alone bilingualism. And so you're getting students learning Murrumpatha at school, if they even are learning Murrumpatha at school. And so then, like, Māori Jevan or Māori Ngā are not prioritised in the school system, and that contribute, like, so institutionally and systemically, you've got a lingua franca happening, but still there is the dominance of English. And so we're working against, like, big tides of the domination of English, and then the languages that are stronger, like Murrumpatha, it's even so hard for the health of that language, even though there might be a couple hundred speakers of that. It's still, there's so much work to be done, because really you want Murrumpatha as a lingua franca, but then you also want all these other languages to be healthy and thriving as well. But unfortunately, the way that the school system and colonization works is that it really does push this dominance of English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've spoken in the past about some of the work you've been doing, Malilma, within language and language teaching on the north coast of New South Wales as well.
Could you remind
our listeners about that?
Yeah, we have to go to the starting point of that, though, Mum.
What's the starting point?
Yes.
How did I come to be on the mid-north coast?
Well, it was through a language conference in Darwin. It was Pulima, an Indigenous language conference, that's held by every 2 years. And I said to Millie, oh, why don't you come down at lunchtime and meet a few people? And so she came down, and ended up that I introduced her to Birrigan.
Yeah, Birrigan Don Velasco, the person bringing us all together in this room, and connections to Carla, the Chilean countryman. And yeah, he's my partner and a Gumbangia Dungari man, and has been working in the language revival space in New South Wales. And that's a story for another time, but Gumbangia has its own incredible story of revival. But something that Birrigan's really driven by and determined for is, first of all, not to be complacent. Gumbangia is seen in New South Wales as being like a beacon, I guess, for other languages, of the strength of the language. And there have been really incredible works coming from the Yellow Rock Mission mob, who started the first language work on Gumbangia, actually in Kempsey on Dungari country, and then that progressed to the Murubai Language and Culture Cooperative, which is where Uncle Gary Williams, which is Uncle Gary Foley's cousin, where he's the boss of that place. And so, you know, there's been some really incredible elders who have paved the way for Gumbangia to be where it is today. But there is a big push that Birrigan is very driven by. So he started an organisation called Bulagan, and that name itself actually refers to the two sisters who made the waves, one of the stories of Gumbangia. And Birrigan's dream really is about full immersion, and he wants Gumbangia, as he says, in every crevice of Guri society, and really firmly in the hands of all the Guri people. And we know that our languages allow us to remember who we are, and we also talk about actually we're not learning our languages so much but remembering them or waking them up. And we currently work in the Nambucca Valley, and we get a lot of teenagers and young people coming to our class, and we also service some young fellas who are at a rehab, and they come to our class, so under 18-year-olds. And there's something really powerful in giving not only young people, but young people who are dealing with kind of the worst parts of the colony and who have experienced the most brutal parts of the colony, giving them language is extremely powerful, and something that, you know, with Mum just talking about, like, a lot of these old languages are mainly it's old people speaking them, and basically we're trying to make language cool. And, you know,
it is cool.
Cool, but we've got to remind ourselves of that, and we've got to remind ourselves of how important it is to not let English dominate us. And
definitely.
Just these, you know, going back to, like, all of Mum's work and the plays of Philef and the bilingual plays and stuff. I know over dinner we were talking about, like, we need to have Gumbangia Italian plays, or my languages back home, like Gulumedigan and Italian plays, or like Spanish or whatever, you know, like really being able to play and move away from English, because the language of English actually traps us into the English worldview, and we want to dream outside of that.
You couldn't have said it better. And It's a shame we're pretty much at the end of the program. I just want to say thanks so much for coming in. What a treat and an honor to have you down here. Not just as an old Philef militant, but also because of the work that you've done, particularly with language in the top end. And thank you, Malilma, and thank you, Kadla. I'll just pass over quickly to Piero. He's got a few...
Quickly, yep. Next week,
announcements.
We've got our film night that we're having next Friday with director Lena Wutmeiner, which was the first woman director to be nominated for an Oscar. The film is called Pasquino Sette Bellezze, or The Seven Beauties. It follows a kind of self-professed Casanova who becomes a deflector of during the World War II and his escapades. Starring Giancarlo Giannini.
Oh, you've got to come down to that, guys. Yeah. And also this Saturday is the Philef AGM at Democritus. Check our social media. It might sound like something boring. It's not just a ticker box exercise. It's going to be interesting. Come down to that. But thank you so much, everyone. Thanks to the listeners. Ci vediamo, ci sentiamo prossima settimana.
Alla prossima.
Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.